overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Sacred mindfulness bell takes us into the moment. And when we tend to the moment, we are tending eternity. And when we tend to the creation, which it's all the creation of the One, we are tending to God. And so in this stopping, by a simple ringing of the bell, we go home. We go home to our true nature. Hear, O Israel, the Lord God is one. Yes, I'm quoting scripture for those of you who didn't know I could. There is one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect. And then we can affirm that life is my life now. So we are a non-dual teaching. By that, we don't have two powers. There's not a power of good and a power of evil. There is only this one life outpicturing in multiplicity. Rumi called it the ocean of love. And he said, all swimming in this ocean of love ends in drowning. In that metaphor, what he's pointing toward is there is no me swimming in the ocean of love anymore. There is only the ocean of love revealing itself in multiplicity through the waves of life. And we are the wave of that ocean, and we are also that ocean. And so we are asked to step out of the local self, the me person, and really move into the we person, that we are all part of this, and then ultimately step out of we into the all. It is all that. And we come here to experience this sense of oneness. And the first step is to just simply stop. Stop thinking, stop worrying, stop planning, stop efforting, and just be. The art of being. And then we observe the breath, and breath is another word for spirit. And we realize that the breath is breathing us. It's not something we've earned, it's not something we do, even though we can regulate it through our intention, but it's something that we allow. And so when the breath breathes us with gratitude, we allow that breath to be deep, to fill up our whole body. And then when we exhale, we can use that exhalation as a release, a letting go. And so then the breath becomes a practice. Breathing in, I breathe in. Breathing out, I breathe out. Thich Nhat Hanh, in his simple, saintly meditation, he would say it's that simple. We breathe in, we breathe out. And then he says, in, out. And we are the awareness that is experiencing the breath going in and out. And so the more we identify as awareness itself, then we notice that this awareness that we all possess is awake. It's alert. It's fully present. And it lives in the present moment. And so when we realize that all of life is about fully accepting in the deepest way the moment that we're in, then we're caused to our own experience. So life will bring us darkness at times, and life will bring us glorious light. Life will bring us sadness at times, and life will bring us glorious joy. And they're all part of this experience called life. And when we can deeply accept all of it as part of our journey, well, then everything becomes sacred. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Another line from scripture. I once was lost. I didn't know who I was, but now I'm found. I've discovered that I'm not the ego, that I'm life itself. And as I experience this one life within me, I see it everywhere mirrored in the world around me. It is all the one life, coming to be seen, coming to be celebrated, coming to be honored, and we are that. And so we rest in that awareness, that simple awareness. And we hear the Buddha, who said, awareness is the Lord of everything. So we're aware of the birds singing outside. We're aware of the feelings within our heart. And we are the awareness of that. There's a little grief within me this Sunday morning because of a little friend in the canine form that left the planet. And I realize that that grief can heal me when I realize that the grief is pointing to the love that's still there, not the loss, because I know that love never dies. Love is eternal. I open to this eternal love, which is our true nature. And then I hear Rumi in my head, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, there is a field. That's that field of love. And when the soul lies down in that field, Rumi says, words are not necessary. That's where we know that silence is the language of God. Even the idea, each other, does not exist, he says. And then, paradoxical, whimsical way, he says, I will meet you there. So we come here to meet in that field of love, where words are not necessary. Even the idea, each other, it means that we're separate, does not exist. And so we are the waves of love falling into the ocean of love, where all swimming ends in drowning. And when you're ready to open your eyes and look at yourself everywhere around you, it's that same ocean shining through each one of us. And we have arrived, we are home. That's what it's all about. It's so painfully simple. When Bob came in this morning around 8 o'clock, he was playing Chopin and Beethoven and George Winston, and then all of a sudden this beautiful piece of music came out, and I said, who's the author of that one? And he said, me. He had taken whatever inspiration had flowed in him, and all of a sudden he was creating this soulful music so that we could meet in that soul, the oversoul that Emerson speaks about. It gets so much bigger, doesn't it, when we step out of the local self and we step into divine love. In the Buddhist teachings, and you know, all the spiritual teachings, we have them in the yantras of the world's religions here, they're all pointing to the same thing, that there is this power for good in the universe, and we can access it, and we find it within ourselves, but it does require that we put our attention where it is. If we're always looking for it in the world, well, then we're going to be putting our good outside ourselves, and nobody has your good out there. So the beauty of the contemplative life, the life of a monk, and I think I was among many a lifetime, because there's something about withdrawing into the garden and just taking communion on the breath that we breathe and the food that's raised in a nurturing sort of way. The chi gets balanced and life becomes the practice. And then you hear this idea, how you do anything is how you do everything. I was given one of the greatest gifts, strangely, in falling on my face on a Friday morning, the day before Trey came back. Hank thinks I'm crazy by saying it was a gift, but it was a gift. Because I woke up covered in blood. My dog was on the opposite side of the room, and now he can't walk. So the mystery is not how I fell and got bloody. The mystery is, how did the pug get way over there where Ashley's sitting? I mean, how the hell did he get over there? And he was lying on the floor. I thought he was dead. I woke up. I jumped out of bed. I had no idea that I had fallen. I ran over to that corner and I picked him up. And wouldn't you know it, he gave me a snort. And I knew that all was well in my world. And then I turned around and I said, oh, something must have happened because there's blood all over the bedroom floor. But I was more concerned about him. I called Gigi and Raul. They came over and helped me clean it up. I called Adam. He came and he took the pugs out of my arm and said, you need to take care of yourself instead of taking care of the pug. So I was already given instructions of what I needed to do. And I realized what I needed to do was to just love myself. I'm 75, but when I fell, I felt like I was a 10-year-old boy who wanted his twin sister to hug him. And so I waddled over to the neighbor's house and I knocked on her door. She sleeps light, so she got up. It was maybe 8 in the morning. And she walked to the front door and she said, oh my God, you look like you fell on your face. And I said, I did. And then she says, well, what can I do for you? Do you need a ride to the hospital? I said, I just need a hug. So she put her arms around me. And that's really, truly all that I needed. I sat down and she took a wet washcloth and wiped the stuff off my face. And then, you know, everybody is concerned about, I just want to be in the moment and find the sacredness of that moment. Who among you has fallen out there? Oh, Jody just said she tripped over her grandchild. Good. We were talking about, oh, going airborne with a dog. Oh, Mektit. Raul was telling me about Mektit coming and her dog pulling her and she went flying. The same thing happened to Trey. We were walking up on Monte Sano. He had baby speck in his arms. She saw something. She went running. He tripped on a root. He went airborne and then he went down. Now, I'm just saying, accidents happen. And then what you do, you get to pick yourself up and go on with that. Parker Palmer, in this wonderful book, On the Brink of Everything, he talks about being 79 years of age, and at this stage of life, everything has become sacred for him. And at the very end of the book, he talks about, well, let me just give you a taste of this man who's kind of like a guru for me. This is it. He says, at the age of 79, I ask myself, how then shall I live knowing that I'm going to die, not in the too distant future? You know, it's good to prepare for that. So he says, as far as I can tell, matter and spirit are intertwined and they're indivisible. We're spiritual beings. We're having a human experience. A distinction without a difference. They're two sides of one coin. We're spirit and we're human. The human is terminal at some level, but the spirit is eternal. It's time to realize that if you're 79 going on 80, or if you're 80 going on 82, or if you're 90 going on 91, or whatever age. He says, it's all good and it's all gold. This is a vast web of life in which our body and our spirit are one. They're not separate. Non-dual teacher. At 79, he was a Quaker. Oh, he was a Quaker. And you know, during the last election, when all that, we had this upheaval in the country, he says, I was one angry little Quaker. It's okay to see when there's brouhaha in the country. And, you know, anger is a part of the oneness. Anger is a motivator to change. So he goes on to say at the very end of the book, I won't be glad to say goodbye to this life, to the challenges that have helped me grow, to the gifts that have been freely given, or to everyone and everything that I love. But I will be glad to play a bit part in making a new life possible for others. That's a prospect that makes life worth dying for. So 20 annual pilgrimage to this holy place called the Boundary. He goes up to northern Michigan, at the boundary of Canada and Michigan, to this very remote place where he feeds his soul, because there's nobody there but the trees and the water, and it somehow takes him back to himself. And this is at the end of the book. He's at his sacred place. But I'll be glad to be a bit part in making new life possible for others. 20 annual pilgrimage to my holy place called the Boundary, where waters have convinced me of what Julian of Norwich said has got to be right. Julian of Norwich said, all is well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. He ended with Julian of Norwich, kind of like Jody does. And then he wrote this lovely little poem. I'm not going to read you the whole poem, but the very last stanza of it is kind of appropriate for the one who fell. So why should I ever be sad, he says, for the life that I've been given? All of this waits for me when at last I stumble and fall. When at last I stumble and fall. It waits for me to join in this dance with all that turns and whirls, a dance done to the silent music of our dappled, singing, swaying world. What we are does not die. And so when I fall, I shall just return to the dance of life. Lastly, he says, To us and how we live between the words and in between the sounds of words, I hear your silent sounding soul, where one abides in solitude, who keeps us one when speech shall go. We go back into that silent place where we know we're one, and it's all speaking the language of God. So that's, he says, we're all on the brink of everything. I was doing a reference to Richard Rohr, and he talks about living in sacred space, and that we create a sacred space within our bodies, within our atmosphere, within our garden. And when you live in that space, he says, we're living in liminal time. Liminal time is the threshold of now. So in that liminal time, in that threshold, in this sacred space, could we know that we're at that threshold of change, that threshold of stepping into a new adventure? Jody's going to Portugal on Wednesday. Isn't that exciting? Now, the question is, who's she going to bring with her when she goes to Portugal? Is she going to bring the one that has expectations? She's bound to have expectations. And if they don't meet those expectations, what I've learned, then you're disappointed. But if you go with no expectations, you go to have a glorious adventure, well, then you live in a place of surprise. And you can receive the gift, even if it isn't a pleasant gift. I remember the first time I went to Italy, and I was in my early 20s, and everywhere I went, they had what they think called siesta. Nothing was opened between, like, was it 1 and 3? They were napping. And I was hungry. I wanted to go out and have lunch, but they said, siesta time, siesta time. I was not a happy guy until I learned the beauty of siesta. And then everything changed. So what if life is here to show us how we get to adapt or not adapt? How we get to meet the moment and say, this moment is good and all is well, even though I've fallen on my face and it doesn't look so happy. I'm teaching this wonderful class on Wednesday. Oh, by the way, announcements. Thank you, Susan, for reminding me. Oh, she's not here. We're having our Breaking Bread this Sunday, next Sunday. And then the Sunday after that is Mother's Day. And the day before that is May 11th. And we're going to do a little cleanup here at the center like we do in the spring. I was telling Dave Seaborg, he said, are you going to make sure that if somebody else is here besides me? So I'm letting you all know that I'll be here. We'll just trim up. There's some little trees growing in the shrubs out here. And it's just a little love because we have a nice guy that mows and does all the stuff. But it's just a way to tend the garden. If you haven't noticed, when you walk into the classroom, a tomato plant has planted herself in the container to the left. In fact, there's two tomatoes. Mother Nature planted them. Mother Nature also planted a little pine tree in this other little container, and she's growing up nicely. By the door that enters the church, there's a large sumac that has planted herself in there, and she has grown gloriously, and she's shading the classroom. The garden speaks to me. Every year we used to have a little bird that would nest in the pipe or the drainage pipe. Every year I'd go out in the spring and there she'd be. Well, she hasn't returned to her little nest, so I know. So she either moved away, found a new mate, and got a better place to lay a nest, you know, on a drainage pipe. Surely you can do better than a drainage pipe. But every year there she was. So, you know, you have relationships with your sacred space. I have these beautiful gardens. And what I've learned with my gardens is I planted them 30 years ago with all this soul. And now they've become the Garden of Whedon, if you know what I mean. And then you have to say, what is a weed? A weed is merely a plant whose virtue hasn't been discovered yet. So you bring an herbalist to walk through my garden, they go crazy. Oh my God, this is medicine, and this is medicine, and oh, this is used for this, and this is... Yeah, it is. It's almost like too much information. But having said that, it's such an honor to be tending the garden. I had this young little man came out to help me yesterday, $75 an hour. He's worth it. He's 22 years old. And he could do all the stuff that I used to do when I was 22. And we were carrying big pots and planting things. And after 2 hours, it looked so beautiful to someone who wants to turn chaos into order. The first week of this month, I'm doing a thing on a whole new world. And to create a whole new world, the first week, we need to wake up. And the funny thing is that we don't wake up. This presence wakes up within us. It wakes up within us when it's ready to wake up. And sometimes we need a 2x4. Anybody have a 2x4 that woke you up? Oh, am I the only one? That's a great way to wake up, to get those 2x4s. You know, and then because in the second week, I talked about chaos as a doorway to a higher order. So when there's chaos in your life, when you lose your job, your lover walks out on you, you've been hired by a church in Alabama, and you come all the way over here after you've told the universe I'll move anywhere but Alabama, and then you find out that the place you would never move to became the place that you actually found love, you found home, you found peace. So obviously I don't have the answers. So when you get out of the idea that I've got to figure it out, where am I going to go next? No, be here now. And that I also learned is wherever I go, I take me with me. So when Trey and I were first together 50 years ago, we lived in 13 places in 2 years. Because, you know, the grass is always greener here. Well, the grass is always greener there. We lived in 5 places in San Francisco. Then we moved to Florida. Then we moved to Boston. Then we moved to Maine. Then we moved to Asheville. We were there for 1 day. We got there on a Sunday, and they didn't sell liquor. And he says, if I can't have a glass of wine, I'm not going to live here. We left Asheville, and from 1 day, we went to Atlanta, and we had our glass of wine. And then we stayed there 11 years just so that he could get his master's in education and I could get some kind of a degree in a religious science church. And then I hadn't ever planned on being a minister, but I have this gift of gab, apparently, and these folks hired me here in Alabama. And the rest is history. So what if we can accept the life that we've been given, even though we don't know where it's going to take us? And you know, it's not about you at all. We're doing this wonderful class on Wednesday, Jeff Foster's The Joy of True Meditation. And he wrote this as the book that was after that. It's called The Deepest Acceptance. And he says, the trap that so many of us have is that we think it's about the me person. And so we go to a spiritual guru, a center, and we're working on ourselves until we get this thing called enlightenment. Well, it's not that way at all. It's not about you getting enlightenment. It never has been. It's about you letting go of you and discovering that you are that. And then you hear that beautiful phrase from Sanskrit, tatvam asi, thou art that. When I went to see Gangaji many years ago, she made it very clear that it's not about becoming enlightened. It's about stopping the efforting from the local self. And when you stop the me person, and you like, it's just like, and then you hear Rumi again. They give you these little hints. Rumi said, oh drop, to be wooed by the ocean. Think about it. He says, give it up, drop, the ocean for a drop. It's a metaphor. So it's not about you, the little drop that thinks he's separate. It's about you, the ocean that's emerging through the drop. And then play with that. There's that little drop of heaven over there and the drop of heaven over. It's all the same. So yesterday when I was working in the garden, I found a little dead snake in my driveway. He was so sweet. I picked him up. He was still limp. He hadn't rigor mortised. I don't know if snakes rigor mortise, but he was tiny and little. And I took him and I took him to one of my pretty plants and I draped his little body. And I said, you get to have a place of honor in your resting place. I deeply accepted that little snake as a part of my family. And I know where his mother is because I saw his mother in the front bush. So, and I think snakes lay eggs, don't they? So she must have laid an egg and somehow it didn't make it. So let me give you a taste of Jeff Foster. And this wonderful book about the deepest acceptance. It's like a wake-up call for me when every time I pull him out. He says, all human suffering, conflict, and violence originate in a dualistic split. And the idea is that there's good, there's bad, eating from the tree of good and evil. My friend Helen Street used to say, all the secrets of the Bible are revealed on the very first page. It's the story, it's a metaphor. We were in a place called Gan Eden, which is a consciousness of bliss. That's what the Garden of Eden means. But then when Satan, which is this part of us that says we're going to eat from the tree of judgment of good and evil, then we will have the same powers as God. So we start saying this is good, this is bad, and from the rest is downhill. You've got good, you've got evil, you've got right, you've got wrong, and you can no longer stay in this consciousness of bliss. So Adam and Eve, again, a metaphor, were exiled from the garden. They could no longer be in a consciousness of bliss because they were in duality. And from the rest on, you know, good and bad. I mean, who wants to pray to a God who will destroy the world and give you a rainbow? I mean, come on. There's a wonderful story called The Shadow Side of Jehovah. And they say without the feminine, Sophia, we don't want an angry God. We want a nurturing, loving God. So Jesus came to bring this love element. Who would have thought? God is love. Well, that's the new idea. So he goes on to say this. All human suffering, conflict, and violence originate in this dualistic thinking, in our present experience, in the separation of me from life itself. We think there's me, and then there's life. No, there's only life, and you're a part of it. So then goes on to say, if we can find out where the violence, the suffering, the separation from life is within ourselves, we begin in our own experience. And if we can clearly see and understand that the suffering we create for ourselves, well, then we will also be able to see how we create suffering for others, for the ones that we love, for our cities, our countries, our continents, and our planet. He started off this chapter by talking about how the world's a mess out there. And he says, well, the reason it's a mess is because we're a mess. And until we deal with our mess, we're going to see a mess in the world. It's all a reflection of consciousness. Don't you love us? Take responsibility. So he goes on to elucidate. Violence begins and ends with you. Recognizing this truth leads to total responsibility in the best sense of the world. It's not you're responsible for this, Miss Sylvia. No, it's you are able to respond to this, Miss Sylvia. Now, that's responsibility in the best sense of the world. Yes, the world is suffering right now, but could I, my response be to embrace that suffering, to accept it where it is? And when you accept, I've got that little dog who's got separation anxiety. Trey and I went to the store the other day and to get some plants at Brooks and Collier. I came out of the Brooks and Collier with all these plants. There he's sitting in the front seat of the car. Oh, oh. His separation anxiety was howling. And so this cute young man who was helping me bring the plants to the car, he said, "What's that sound?" I said, "Oh, it's the pug. He's got separation anxiety." I thought the kid was more frightened than I was. He ran over to the door. I said, "You can pet him." And as soon as he put his hand on Humphrey's little head, Humphrey stopped. He knew that someone was there. The greatest acceptance. You accept life on life's terms. He's got separation anxiety. Okay. Violence begins and ends with you. Recognizing this truth leads to total responsibility in the best sense of the word. I'm not offering a way out of madness of this human mind, but a way into it. Oh, isn't that worth it? I wish Seamus were here right now. I'm not offering a way out of the mind and its madness, but a way into it. When you get the crazy, nattering nabobs of negativity going on in your head, don't run away from them. Inquire into them. Recognize them. What are you trying to show me? That's what he's saying. This is another way of looking at our own suffering. It's a radical way. Instead of trying to remove it and deny it, you relate to it. So here's sadness coming up. My beloved teacher, Kennedy Schultz, wrote this beautiful prayer about grief. And the prayer was called, "My Grief Has Healed Me." And he had it read at his memorial service when he passed. And he says, we grieve those that we that have passed because we love them, not because they're gone. And so, you know, I woke up this morning feeling the presence of Bert, and he was with me all morning. Jody's going to Portugal, and I was wearing these beads that I put over Bert's painting in the house. And I put them off the painting, put them on my neck to wear the satsang. And I said, "I want you to carry Bert with you." So I put them around her neck. He's like a guardian angel for me. He's like always with me. I know I sound crazy because I have a lot of guardian angels. Not too many humans around anymore. Oh, well. True freedom is found not through escaping our present experiences, but strangely enough, by diving fearlessly into its hidden depths. I know there's a pony in here somewhere, Sylvia. Dive right into where you're challenged. In there, perhaps, we will discover all the peace, the love, and the deepest acceptance that we were always seeking out there. It's not out there. It's never been out there. And so if you're chasing your good out there, stop. It's right here. In oneself lies the whole world. And if you know how to look and learn, this is Krishnamurti, then the door is there, and it's the doorway to your heart, and the key is in your hand. That's your willingness to go within. Huh. So let's go to the very end of the book. I like to give you the meat in the middle and then the meat at the end, so you don't have to take the class. Well, you really should. But anyway, to fearlessly face our present experiences and to find the deepest acceptance there and nowhere else. That's this home. You know, I have arrived, I am home. You're going to find your peace by meeting your deepest resistance, your deepest blocks. In oneself lies the whole world, if you know how to look and learn. So what if you're meeting this block, this fear, this obstruction? Rumi says it's not about finding where the love is, it's about finding where the obstruction to the love is. So what if the obstruction is the thought? Like we have this beautiful poster in the bookstore, and it says, when you change the way you look at things, well, the things you look at change. So it's no longer the outer that has to take care of the inner. I get to find this place called home and then bring it to the world. And when the world gives me suffering, when the world gives me hardship, when the world gives me death, I meet that death in a mindful, loving way. So here's at the very end of the book, in recognizing yourself as this wide open space in which all the waves of life and love appear and disappear, as this intimate vastness, which is what we are, in which all thought, all sensation, all feeling, they come and go, it becomes a lot clearer what awakening is really all about. It's about returning to that space that's just waiting for us in its fullness. It's not about you, the ego, getting enlightenment. In recognizing yourself as the vast and intimate open space of awareness. And then, you know, when you were a little boy and little girl, if you did Dick and Jane like I did, you would learn to stop, to look, and to listen. Moment by moment. Stop, go within, look within for what this discovery place is showing you, and then listen, the art of listening. Listen to that still, small voice, Eckhart Tolle says, that doesn't get louder but gets clear when we become still. He's saying the same thing. In recognizing yourself as that vast and intimate open space of awareness, it's no longer a question of something called me becoming more awakened over time or reaching total integration in the future, for it seems that, from the perspective of who I really am, every wave that appears right now is already integrated within this ocean. Every wave is already intimate with what I am. And so it's not a question of me moving toward an endpoint of total integration in the future. This is the dream of a seeker who always lives in a story of time and spiritual achievement. Then time collapses and there is no more time. All you have is the moment. Could we live in the moment? I know. It's always, always a question. Always, always a question of recognizing. There's that first step of spiritual mind treatment. You go back to the first step of treatment to recognize that that's all there is and the rest you can throw out. And thank you. Amen. It's always, always a question of recognizing the integration of present experience right here and now. It's about awakening to the completeness and the deep acceptance of this moment just as it is. This is the moment. I'll quote scripture again for you, Anaya. This is the moment the Lord has made. Could I rejoice and be glad in it, even though I've fallen on my face? Hey, the pug isn't dead. He's alive and well. And guess what? He pooped on the floor, so I didn't have to worry about him getting in position anymore. You deal with it. It's about awakening to the completeness and the deep acceptance of this moment just as it is. Tomorrow's integration, he says, is not my job, Raul. Tomorrow's integration is not my job. And there is only here and now. That's all we ever have. In the last sentence of the book, he says, life heals itself through you. Reflect on that. Life heals itself through you. And so something happens that's uncomfortable, and we hear Emma Curtis Hopkins, this too is good, this too is for God, and I make a demand on the universe to see the blessing. This too is good, this too is God, and I demand to see the blessing. You want to ring that bell, Jody, and I'll do a little meditation, and then we'll do a little collection and a song. Oh, yes, there's the bell again. Oh, that's right where we are, with the deepest acceptance of life, on life's terms, right now. Oh, and let's bring mindful awareness into our body as we align our spine, sitting upright. I'll always be a yoga teacher. You let the shoulders come back. You let your chin be parallel to the floor. Your crown chakra is open. And so you are a physical body sitting in a chair with your chakras open to the flow of energy all around you, to the awareness that is blossoming within your soul, to practice deep rest. Instead of deep depression, we go deep rest. We're going to rest instead of get depressed. And in that rest, we recognize that we are here. We recognize that breath within the breath. We'll call it spirit. We observe that spirit by its very nature can detach from the world, but the soul within us wants to be a part of the energy, the passion of the world. So spirit and soul come together in that invisible realm of essence and energy, and that is what we are. We are the essence of spirit, and we are the energy of the soul, expressing itself, revealing itself, discovering itself endlessly anew, in each moment. And then we realize that all we ever have is the moment. So we breathe into that moment that we're in right now together. And we rest in each other's embrace because we are all the same love. So we feel that love that we all share, interspiriting with each one in this room. And in that, we're taking refuge in the Sangha. In Buddhism, they talk about the three refuges. You take refuge in the Buddha, which is the awakened consciousness. It's not about a man. You take refuge in the Dharma, which is the truth teachings. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Tatwamasi, thou art that. All there is that. The truth that's discovered from within the soul. And so we come here to open to the truth that unhides itself from within. And thirdly, we take refuge in the Sangha, which is the community here. When we come together with an intention, let go of our wave-like nature and return to the ocean of love. Well, then we can just give thanks that we have come home to this love that is always waiting for us. And if you have a difficult time finding that love within yourself, look outside yourself where it's mirrored. Jodi was talking about her three grandchildren, and when she does, she just lights up with love inside herself. When I talk about my little pug, he truly is the incarnation of light and love for me at this stage. I don't see his compromised fragility. I see his radiant little presence. And so we get to choose what we're going to focus on in this life. So I enter into that smile within my heart. Because I know when I go to that still loving place within I have arrived, I am home. I don't need anything to change on the outside for me to be okay on the inside. I don't need some future something to happen in order for me to feel complete. I have found it right here, right now, sitting in this chair, in this Sangha of love and light, in this sacred space that we've created together, at that liminal time of now, that threshold of how am I going to meet the next moment. And I truly say I'm going to meet it with gratitude. So it's all about sowing and reaping, back to the Bible. What we sow is what we reap. And so as I choose to sow loving thoughts, deepest acceptance of life on life's terms, well, then I've let go of my resistance to what is. And in that letting go of resistance, I find this deepest acceptance, not something that I do, but something that I am. I accept life right now on life's terms. And where there's suffering, I seek to bring compassion. Where there's darkness, I open to the light in the midst of the darkness. Where there is fear, I seek to bring calm. It all works together in a beautiful dance that Parker Palmer started reminding us that our life heals us. And then we look at healing according to Dr. Ernest Holmes. All healing, he says, is a perception of wholeness, to see the wholeness inherent within every circumstance. In your challenged relationships, there's a pattern of wholeness also that's there. In your physical challenges, there's also a pattern of wholeness that's already there. And so when we choose you this day, who you will serve, we get to choose to serve the light. We get here to choose to serve compassion. We get to choose to serve acceptance. And then feel how that feels. No more resistance. And then you hear that beautiful line that says, all suffering is simply a resistance to what is. Woe. So then we meet that resistance. Not like we're going to resist it, but we're going to embrace that resistance. Okay, there's still some more of me that needs to be held and loved. And this is the journey to nowhere, the journey to now here. Take a deep integrating breath. Give a sigh for the divine. One more time. I am letting go of the things that no longer serve me. Deep breath. Sigh of release. Letting go. I am set free, and so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new world.